This is LBC London News.
22 minutes past three to the US now, and the stage is set in the United States for another TV debate, this time between the two men seeking the vice presidency. Donald Trump's running mate Mike Pence is going to go head-to-head for 90 minutes tonight with his rival, Senator Tim Kaine, who's Hillary Clinton's sidekick in this November's election. Joining me now from the US is our US correspondent Simon Marks. Very good afternoon to you, Simon.
Hello, Chris.
So, looking at the polls then, 30% of American voters have never even heard of Mike Pence and Tim Kaine. They've got quite a tall order tonight, haven't they?
They have a tall order indeed. I mean, look, it's not the first time that vice presidential candidates have taken a substantial backseat to the, in this case, man and woman who decided to pluck them from obscurity and put them on the presidential ticket. And it probably won't be the last time that we go into a vice presidential debate in which the vice presidential candidates have substantially less charisma and a substantially lower profile than the people that they are running with. But nonetheless, this time around, it does indeed seem particularly to be the case that Americans haven't really connected with Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, who is, of course, Donald Trump's running mate, and Tim Kaine, the senator from Virginia, who is Hillary Clinton's running mate. So this is their big coming out party on television tonight. The networks are all clearing 90 minutes of time for a debate which will consist of 9 10-minute segments, and questions will run the gamut, domestic and foreign policy. They could be asked absolutely anything during the course of that 90 minutes. Really, what they are going to try and do, I think, both of them, is to damage the other guy, but not embarrass themselves or say anything that tomorrow their boss, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, will be asked to explain. Certainly, both sides are exuding tremendous confidence, as you would, of course, expect, about the contest that will take place here in a few hours' time. Robbie Mook is Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and this is what he had to say about how he thinks things could go for Tim Kaine and the Democrats tonight.
They need to change the message. They've had a bad week, so we're expecting them to throw a lot of mud. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Mike Pence responds to questions about Trump's behavior in the last week.
Very clear indication that Tim Kaine, the Democratic vice presidential candidate, is going to do whatever he can to try and force Mike Pence to say whether he agrees or disagrees with some of the more outlandish things that his presidential candidate, Donald Trump, has said, not just in the last week, of course, but over the last several months. On the Republican side, Kellyanne Conway is a top campaign advisor for Donald Trump, and she says we're going to see the Republicans putting across a very positive message.
You'll see in Mike Pence somebody who's able to defend Donald Trump, the running mate, but at the same time take the case right to Hillary Clinton.
And she says that Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, will be challenging Tim Kaine to defend Hillary Clinton's foreign policy record. Indeed, Mike Pence himself said just a few hours ago that he could fill the entire 90-minute debate up simply by challenging Tim Kaine on Hillary Clinton's foreign policy record. My sense is that he won't get the opportunity to do that, but it gives you a sense of some of the bravado that both campaigns are exuding before the on-air light illuminates and the debate begins.
I'd have thought one of the questions that everyone's asking is how much does this debate actually matter? How many voters are there out there who make their decisions based on who the candidate's running mate is?
Well, I think that is the big question, and the answer to it is traditionally these vice presidential debates don't make much of a difference. They certainly create an enormous number of talking points that we will be discussing on the programme tomorrow, I'm sure, and that Americans will be talking about over the next couple of days. But look, at the end of the day, you only really remember a vice presidential debate if and when one of the candidates either lands a zinger that proves to be very memorable. You may recall Senator Lloyd Bentsen, who turned to his Republican rival Dan Quayle and said, "I knew Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine, and Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy." I mean, we all remember that debate, even if we don't necessarily remember Senator Bentsen, who went down to defeat. He was running with Michael Dukakis as his running mate, and even if we don't really remember former Vice President Dan Quayle to any great degree. But these debates can make a difference if a candidate makes a major gaffe. And so they have to be really walking on eggshells, these two men. And it's very difficult for both of them. I think it's exceptionally difficult this time around for Mike Pence because, you know, there are questions about how on earth he has come to terms with being Donald Trump's running mate. This is a very conservative, religious, Christian conservative in the Republican Party, running alongside a candidate who just on Friday night suggested that Americans ought to be scouring the internet to find the sex tape of a former Miss Universe. Now, how on earth Governor Pence squares that with being Donald Trump's running mate, that's an interesting question every reporter in the country would like to ask him, and I'm absolutely sure it's a question that Senator Tim Kaine is going to lob in his direction. Equally, Tim Kaine can be asked some very uncomfortable questions. He has spent a career passionately favouring free trade deals, and yet he's now signed on to a campaign, Hillary Clinton's, which says that it's absolutely against the so-called Trans-Pacific Partnership, the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership, a huge expansion of free trade into the Asia-Pacific region. So how does he square that with his decision to join Hillary Clinton's ticket? Those are complicated questions for these men to answer, and I'm pretty sure that they will be lobbing those questions at one another during the course of this debate.
Absolutely. Has it got the same sort of format as the other debate?
It's got a very, very similar format to the first Trump-Clinton debate. More topics, though. I think in that debate there were 6 15-minute segments. This one has got 9 10-minute segments. And I will tell you, I'm going to be very interested to watch the performance of the moderator tonight. Her name is Elaine Kiano. I personally think she's one of the fastest rising stars in American television news. She is the anchor on a online service, a digital service, a 24-hour news channel called CBSN that CBS launched about 18 months ago. And for my money, she's one of the best political interviewers in the country. So I think the Debate Commission made a very interesting choice in picking her. She's making a bit of history here tonight because she's the first Asian American. She's a Filipino descent. She's the first Asian American ever selected to moderate one of these debates, either vice presidential or presidential. And it's going to be very interesting to see how she performs and also how she handles these two men if they really do go after one another.
Yeah. And I also noticed, I think I've seen pictures, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no podiums tonight. They're all sitting down around a desk. Is that going to make a difference, do you think?
It may make a difference. Yeah, I mean, it may well make a difference. I think the vice presidential debates traditionally have that set. In fact, one of the issues that I think these presidential debates have already surfaced is that the Commission on Presidential Debates could use a little bit of extra cash to buy some new sets. I mean, we see the same set every 4 years, barely anything changes about it. And the sets, I think, become increasingly anachronistic when you look at them up against the much more glitzy showbiz style sets that CNN and MSNBC and Fox were using during the primary contests. Mm-hmm. But yes, you know, there is the possibility that style of set either foments a more relaxed degree of discussion or encourages them to go after one another in a slightly less formal way than Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump did last time round when they were standing behind podiums. Don't forget, by the way, we've got the next presidential debate coming up in the very early hours of Monday morning, UK time. That's going to be Trump versus Clinton. That's going to be taking place in St. Louis. And again, a different format. That's going to be a town hall setting where they face questions not just from the two moderators of the debate, but most of the questions will be coming from members of the public in the audience. So fireworks probably ahead tonight. Fireworks definitely ahead in the early hours of Monday morning UK time there in St. Louis.
Yeah, I certainly think that's the one that everyone is certainly looking forward to seeing. But very busy weekend in terms of what's been going on. No shortage of controversy over the last few days for those two vice presidential candidates to talk about. Do bring us up to date on Donald Trump and his taxes. Now, he lost $900 million, but correct me if I'm wrong, his top aide's saying he's a genius. How does that Square.
Yes. The most dangerous place in Washington, D.C. over the weekend was between a top Trump aide, or any of the top Trump aides, and an open microphone as they all scrambled to assure the country that these leaked 1995 tax filings, which show that in 1995, as a result of the financial crash, Donald Trump lost in excess of $900 million, a loss that could have set him up to pay absolutely no tax for the next 18 years, according to accountants who studied those documents on behalf of the New York Times, to which those documents were anonymously leaked. Top Republican aides fanned out to insist that these documents just showed that Donald Trump is a genius. They show that Donald Trump's a genius because not only was he able to build his business back up out of the wreckage of the economic crash of the 1990s, but also he was completely legally, and the Times conceded he did no wrongdoing in their story, completely legally was able to use America's tax laws to protect his business interests. So they say he's a genius, and Donald Trump has taken things even further last night at a rally, saying for the first time that he's no longer interested in acting on his own behalf, but is interested in acting in the public interest, and that he believes he is uniquely placed to change America's tax code because he uniquely understands it.
The unfairness of the tax laws is unbelievable. It's something I've been talking about for a long time, despite, frankly, being a big beneficiary of the laws. But I'm working for you now. I'm not working for Trump.
I'm working for you now. I'm not working for Trump. That was the phrase that paid for Donald Trump last night. It's taken him quite a long while, it must be said, to articulate that viewpoint. You know, his critics say that he has got more front than Harrods here, that this is a man who has perhaps paid no tax for the best part of two decades, won't tell American voters exactly what the situation is because he's still refusing to release his tax records. Indeed, he argued last night that he won't release them because they are too complex for the American public to understand. And he has absolutely left himself open for this kind of criticism from Hillary Clinton.
How anybody can lose a dollar, let alone $1 billion, in the casino industry is kind of beyond me, right? And it's just hard to figure.
And, of course, she also took him to task for not having released his tax records, for not, as the Democrats insist, paying his fair share. Now, Republicans say, well, he acted legally. He acted within the U.S. tax code. Where were all these Democrats? Why weren't they changing the laws to prevent someone like Donald Trump from using the tax code to help himself if his behavior is so egregious? But nonetheless, I think there's no question that for Donald Trump, the optics of all this are very bad. And it's a self-inflicted wound, because by not releasing his tax returns weeks ago and getting out in front of the story, he's allowed a situation in which his tax filings, at least one of them, gets leaked anonymously to the New York Times. And then it's the New York Times and the Clinton campaign that is setting the tone of the conversation that we've witnessed over the last 72 hours.
It's interesting he said, I'm working for you now, not for Trump. Isn't that the first time he said that? Because why did he say that during the debate?
I agree. I've never heard him articulate the view before that he's doing this out of public service. I mean, he has on occasion said in the past, I don't have to be doing this. I could be having a lot more fun than talking to you people right now. I mean, he has intimated that that's what he believes, but he's never actually articulated it. And I think that that gives you a sense of how much the Trump campaign internally recognizes that this tax story has damaged him. And they are scrambling to get out in front of it and to say, I mean, they say here in America, you know, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. I mean, there's no particularly positive spin you can put on this situation. So they're doing the best they can to say, well, it just goes to show that he's uniquely, no one knows more about the tax code, they say, than Donald Trump, and he's the man you should trust to fix it.
And meanwhile, Mrs. Clinton's had some welcome news from the polls over the last couple of days, just edging ahead to a relatively comfortable lead over her Republican rival.
Yes, I think the Democrats will be very happy by the latest batch of polls they came out within the last 24 hours, and they all now show a pattern of Hillary Clinton with a 4-5% lead nationally over Donald Trump. But remember, as we've said on this program many, many times over the last few weeks, national numbers don't mean very much. It's all about the battleground states where the election will be won or lost. And Hillary Clinton has moved into a narrow lead in some of those battleground states, particularly in Florida. And there is a growing sense here that because of the way this presidential election works, and remember there's this funny thing called the Electoral College, and what each candidate needs is 270 votes in the Electoral College to win the presidency. It all boils down, many analysts believe, to Florida. And if Donald Trump doesn't win Florida, his path to winning the presidency becomes so narrow as to be almost impossible. So if Hillary Clinton can maintain that narrow lead in Florida, and if that polling data is accurate, and she is indeed now nosing ahead of him there, they will be extremely happy, the Democrats, because they will come to the conclusion that Florida is going to be the state that takes her into the White House.
Well, 34 days to go. What's going to happen next?
I've given up predicting.
Thank you very much, Simon Marks, our US correspondent live from Washington for us. Don't forget Simon's podcast, Race for the White House, is available online at lbc.co.uk. Comes out every Friday. Subscribe on our website. And, of course, it's free.